I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Today, we continue our Instigator series in which we revisit their interviews and unveil the speakers for our annual event, the Instigator Experience. Our fourth Instigator is Experience Institute founder Victor Saad. By designing his own education through a series of experiences, Victor is challenging the status quo in higher education. Applications for the event, as I've reminded you, open on December 15th, so make sure you get on the pre-launch list because we received over 130 applications for just 60 spots, and you can get on the list by texting the word INSTIGATE, all lowercase, to the number 38470. That's INSTIGATE, all lowercase, to the number 38470. Before we start today's episode, I want to tell you about both of our sponsors. It's that time of year when you're probably reflecting on this past year and possibly setting goals for the new one. If you're not, you really should be. And a big part of accomplishing goals is going to involve a combination of both information and skills. Downpour, who I mentioned to you on a few previous episodes, is an audiobook source that allows you to rent instead of buy, so you end up getting 70% off the retail price of audiobooks, and it works on all iOS and Android devices. Use the promo code CREATIVE and you'll get your first book for just $3.95. Now let's talk about SkilledUp, who has curated the best of online courses and alternative education resources and put it all under one roof to help you obtain the skills you need to succeed in your career. They've even put together a free and really useful toolkit that you can download by visiting promo.skilledup.com/creative. That might have been a mouthful, so once again, that's promo.skilledup.com/creative. Victor, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, we had you back when we were called Blogcast FM as a guest, just because you had such an amazing story. And the reason we have you back again this time is for a couple of reasons. One, your story is amazing. It needed to be shared again, and you've had such a transformative journey. The other, of course, is, as I said in the pre-roll to this, you are actually one of our speakers at the Instigator Experience, so I'm really excited to share you with our audience today. And on that note, can you tell us a bit about yourself, your journey, your story, your background, and how that has brought you to what you are up to in the world today?
Yeah, so... You know, so I grew up in a Middle Eastern family where I was supposed to become a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. Those were my options. But I had some really incredible teachers and mentors in middle school, high school, and, you know, were really inspired by them. And I kind of had a rough family life during those years. So those guys were my heroes, those individuals, not just guys. Those people were my heroes. One of my friends from the church that I was attending told me about a school up here in Chicago, and she was studying education up here. So I brought my parents in the same room and told them, hey, I'm not going to become a doctor. I'm going to study education and work with students. And you know, obviously that rustled some feathers, but they gave me their blessing. And I went and studied here in Chicago, and then started working with middle school and high school students, and just really got to start seeing the power of, you know, building into a younger generation than me, and then more importantly, not more importantly, but also the place I was working was this church that had teamed up with some community, some schools in the community, and we were building a 40,000 square foot student space in the west suburbs of Chicago that was going to be a safe space for students. Huge budget. It was just something I never thought I'd be a part of. And I got to see this like intersection of business and kind of like nonprofit work, just kind of mesh. And it was a category of business called social enterprise. And yeah, I thought, man, this is what I want to be doing with my life. I want to do well and do good. And so I was going to get my MBA. That was my next step. I was like 25 years old. So that's kind of like my, like kind of the pre-story, I suppose, before leap year started. And you know, Srini, like firsthand, the cost and the style of MBAs, or just generally speaking, grad programs, university settings, it's not for everyone. It's a great setup for some people, but it's not for everyone. And I'm just noticing that more and more for myself. And so, you know, after contemplating everything, studying the GMAT, taking the test, doing interviews, having a hopeful track to a great college in Chicago here, I decided that it wasn't for me. And so, taking, I guess, a chapter out of several other kind of bloggers and writers' books, I decided to start a blog and a newsletter, and it was called Leap Year. It was all about like designing my own education. That kind of started me on this long journey of designing my own masters.
So, you know, I want to go back to part of the beginning of the pre-story. You talked about this idea that, you were supposed to become a doctor, lawyer, engineer. Obviously, being Indian, I can relate. And you mentioned that idea of rustling feathers. And so many people, I feel, end up in places they don't want to end up, living lives they don't want to live, doing work that they don't want to do, because they're so afraid to rustle feathers. And I'm really interested in talking to you about how you overcame that whole fear and how you managed that.
Yeah. So, you know, there are probably two main times with my parents that I've just like, you know, I'm several times I've probably made them just like smack their foreheads. Though there were two times, one when I told them I was going to not become a doctor, and the other was when I told them I was going to quit my job to design my education, whatever that means. Middle Eastern parents trying to understand that's a pretty funny thing. And you know what I will never forget someone else telling me is like, you will reap what you sow in these kinds of conversations. So if you sow, you know, like frustration, anger, like trying to hide certain facts or dance around or manipulation, like it's going to reap those things. Like if you sow exclusivity, you're going to be excluded. Like so like how do I bring my parents into this journey? Like how do I make sure that it's not like me telling them something, mm-hmm. though I was,
sure.
But how do I show them how I got to where, why, like to that decision or those decisions, why I thought it was going to be helpful. And then also explain like what the road ahead would look like. Mm-hmm. And so I had to do that in both situations. I had to talk about what other vocations I could possibly do, and that I had researched the salaries and knew that it meant I wasn't going to make as much money or have, you know, like certain luxuries that, you know, the other vocations were going to afford me, but that's okay with me. And, you know, same thing with Leap Year, right? You know, just saying, you know, just explaining how I was going to fund it and what I hope to get out of it and like what my starting points were and who my team was, like of friends and so on. That was all helpful. And I think that's if you're going to rustle feathers, there are people in the camp that just say like, you know, like be bold and just like mow people over. That works for some people, but that wasn't my style. I was going to bring people along, and I think it served them well. I mean, it served us well. Like my parents were at the TED talk I gave at the end of Leap Year, and they were the loudest cheerers. You know, that which is like no, I didn't expect that, but I think it all paid off to bring them along.
You know, I love that idea of reap what you sow. I've never heard it put that way before, because so often, you're right, we come from this antagonistic place or this place that we're fighting a battle against them, as opposed to saying, this is why you should join me in the cause.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and antagonistic is the right word. That's the kind of thing you just got to dodge. You got to be careful of it. I think so. But once again, I've seen the other work, what the other side work to some extent. It feels more temporary. Like it feels like you're going to end up burning a lot of bridges the other way. So, and in the long run, you know, like, and the long term play, like I'm talking like decades. Like, I want to leave in my wake like good relationships. Like I want to be at peace with people. And maybe once again, like that's not for everybody, but for me, I want to leave them better than when I found them or when they found me. So I think that's a huge part of rustling feathers is thinking about the other, like being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned having a somewhat difficult childhood, and I'd love for you to kind of expand on that for the people who haven't heard your story and kind of how that really has impacted, you know, everything that you're doing today and how you show up in the world today.
Yeah. So, I mean, my parents, dad was traditional, kind of very strict Middle Eastern man. And, you know, my parents had an arranged marriage, knew each other for 15 days before they were engaged, 3 months before they were married, which works in a lot of cultures. But when you move to the States and you have, you know, you just face everything that, you know, that moving across the world brings, and then you also have this world opened up to you of possibilities and freedom. I think my parents just it just wrecked their marriage, all of that combined, and obviously several other things in the mix too. So in middle school, they had a really messy divorce, and then throughout high school, those individuals who poured into me became my heroes. Like I told you, soccer coaches and teachers and youth pastors and all and the like. And, you know, when I told my parents that I wasn't going to go become a doctor to work in education, I think they got really curious about what in the world happened to me and who was kind of like seeding these ideas. And so when I went off to college, you know, they had already met those individuals, but they started spending a little more time with them. And part of it was, I think those guys knew that I was really hopeful that my parents would someday like be able to reconcile in some capacity. And so they spent a lot of time and a lot of energy on them. And a couple years into college, I get wind that they're all going to go to a marriage conference together, which is like a conference where you work on your marriage, I suppose, but they weren't married. They're divorced. What's going on here? So then next thing I know, my dad calls me, I don't know, a couple months later, and he says, "Victor, I have the good news. Mom said yes." And you know, it was this hard thing for me at first, to be honest. Like, it was this super sweet. I'm like, what? But at that point, my dad had I just kind of accepted, okay, like my dad is who he is. He's not going to change. But he had actually changed. And my mom had, you know, had warmed up to him again. And it's like, now they're happily married and they're, you know, giving me advice on relationships, which is just hilarious. Like, so, you know, I think then I realized, like, more than anything, the power of relationships. If there's anything that's going to be on my tombstone, it's that relationships are, you know, are the most powerful means for change. And just watching those individuals, the array of individuals that spent time on me, mm-hmm. spent time on my parents, and, you know, brought my family back together, I think will forever change me. So I'm working in education now, but education is a, I think, a relationship game. It's, you know, putting great individuals around one another and in front of one another. So they can learn together. And so that's what I'm doing.
So let me ask you this, and I may have asked you this last time. You know, I think it's really amazing that you've had all these incredible mentors and influencers in your life and relationships. How do you recognize when somebody like that shows up in your life and realize that, okay, this is a person who could fundamentally alter the course of my life?
I think you have to, I think it's when you see a glimpse of what you want to be in that person, and that person sees a glimpse of who they were in you. Like that, there's a little bit of some crazy, synergistic, unseen thing that happens, which is very not concrete when I'm sharing this with you. So, you know, like I think to make it maybe a little bit more concrete, if you're looking at somebody who leads a life the way you hope to lead it, with their marriage or maybe in their business or maybe in just the way they treat people generally, and you start wanting to spend more time with them and learn from them in that capacity, like because you hope you're like them, I think it's appropriate to say, hey, like, would you spend time with me every month or every quarter or, you know, whenever there's something that comes up, would you be willing to like kind of look into my life every once in a while? And then vice versa, to be able to say to them, like, is there something I can do for you? Like, is there, I have fresh legs, I have energy, I'm not, you know, I don't have a family, I can help, whether it's really practically speaking, like stuff around the house or with your kids or whatever, or something more, you know, more kind of pie in the sky stuff, like just sharing ideas or being a sounding board or for your work. And you just take it kind of, I think, you know, meeting by meeting at that point. And yeah.
Hmm. Wow. You know, let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk specifically about the Leap Year Project. You know, a lot of people here are new listeners, so they may not know specifically what the Leap Year Project is. But the thing that I want to start with is that you looked at something like the education system and you said, you know what, this isn't going to work for me. And you decided to challenge something that is an incredibly established structure and succeeded. What I'm really interested in is how you develop that capacity to look at something as established as education and find the courage to say, you know what, I am going to completely challenge the status quo and do something so wildly different.
Yeah, so I think what I've realized is that courage entails a lot of naivete, mm-hmm. and kind of like I didn't know much better, right? Like I just another way I've heard it is that innovation is born out of necessity. I think that's probably a cliche statement now, but I was hell-bent on learning and gaining. Like I remember when I was studying for the GMAT, I had this sticky note that, and so I was working full time in a job that was all over on hours. Like I up early in the morning meeting with students before school, late at night going to football games and soccer games and hosting, you know, student events and stuff. And so my study hours were like wee hours of the morning. And I remember seeing this damn sticky note, just like credibility, tools, and network. Like that's what, and then employment, like, you know, kind of a fourth, but that's why I wanted to get my MBA, like credibility, tools, network. I remember the font I used, like I remember my handwriting, and that was going to cost me $120,000. I didn't have $120,000, nor did I know if I wanted to spend $120,000 that way. So, but I was hell bent on getting those things in a different kind of way. And I needed it, or so I thought. I was just so sure that I needed to spend a season of my life really working on gaining some tools in this arena of business and social change and design, gaining like some credibility in the space, and you know, finding the right people. Well, that with some naivete about what people say is right or wrong, I didn't care. I mean, I didn't know, so I just had to do it. I just had to figure something else out. The other thing that I think helps with courage is a safety net of really wonderful people. And I'm not talking about mentors like we were earlier. I'm talking about people who like don't define you by your accomplishments and know you for like the sound of your laugh and the way you put like sauce on the side of everything and the way you spend, you know, the hours that, you know, where no one is looking, like those people, and inviting those people along for the ride and making sure they're included on such a decision. I think that bolsters courage more than anyone probably cares to admit, is knowing that there are a few of those people who'll be there even if everything failed, even if everything just like went up in flames. So yeah, I think hunger plus a good community, you know, will make you able to probably do anything, you know.
You know, I love that you brought up the people who don't define you by your accomplishments, because I think even ourselves, we get very caught up in this trap of defining who we are through our accomplishments.
Yeah. Yeah, and like even how we introduce ourselves, you know, like And you know, just saying I'm the founder of, or I work for, or I started, or whatever. I think, especially in the circles we roll in, right, Srini? Like it's very much how people introduce themselves. And you know, quite frankly, it's an easy introduction. It's a good conversation starter. So it's not all bad. It's just when it seeps into like the very fiber of who we are is our accomplishment. That's a scary place.
It really is. And the funny thing is, when you realize all your accomplishments and all your accolades are temporary, that gets shaken to the core then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you're starting something, I think everyone feels that, right? Like man, I'm spending 70 hours a week trying to get something off the ground. Is it worth it? Like, what if it fails? Like, I mean, all these questions. It's just a slew of questions. And so if that is who you are, if that's how you define like the core of who you are, yeah, it's a sad place, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's do this. Let's get into specifics about Leap Year and what it is, how it came to life, how it has led to all the other things that you're up to.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are a couple things I had to figure out. One was some sort of structure. So I didn't just look like some wandering buffoon, being a hippie traveling my way through the world, which isn't a bad thing. I just work buffoon, but I mean, like, I was telling people I was going to make up my own masters. So I was like, you know, I just needed to put some structure to it so they could understand it. So, 12 experiences in 2012, you know, all centered around design, business, and social change. There was a good ring to it. It was leap year, so 12 months, 12 experiences. That all of it just had a good ring. It just all fell together that way. From a funding perspective, I thought to myself, okay, like, what can I do for my community that maybe they would want to like sponsor me or subscribe to to something. So I promised to do a monthly newsletter and a weekly blog and bring people together around the dinner table whenever I was in their cities and so on. So yeah, it was kind of like a glorified magazine subscription meets a sponsor of the Egyptian kid. So that's kind of how I funded it. A couple hundred people did that. And I shared my learnings and so on. And then as far as landing the experiences, you know, I building the brand helped, and building, you know, a network of a couple hundred people, telling them what I was doing, and then just coming up with a really like simple like system for getting to spot a problem in a company. So asking a CEO or a creative director of a small company and saying, hey, can I interview your staff over the course of a few days and try to find a common problem or need or something that people want more of in their space, and then pitch you on something I would do over the following, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like a really mini reverse consultant of sorts, in the sense that I was learning while I was getting to work on these projects. And yeah, I did that, you know, nearly 12 times. And I stayed, yeah. The last project was my Kickstarter, so that wasn't a project. So 11 times, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did that all over the world. So China, Costa Rica, Cairo, L.A., Seattle. I worked at Union Rescue Mission in downtown L.A., serving Thanksgiving dinner and helping organize the Thanksgiving meal there, all the way up to working at an architecture firm that was working on Microsoft's new healthcare facility and working with the experience design group that was developing their lobby or building out their lobby. So doing a big installation there. I got to work with Alex Boguski, big ad agency guy, who had left kind of his main career and had pointed me towards a new startup ad agency focused on American-made products. Worked with a clothing manufacturer in China. You name it. I kind of got to dabble in a lot of different really amazing things. And then at the very end, we did a Kickstarter because there was this constant question that I was asking through Leap Year as inviting other people to take a risk of their own. And my dissertation, my final kind of paper, if you will, would be to compile stories of risk takers, people who are learning to risk and then in turn risking to learn. And that got funded through Kickstarter that we did in December of 2012. So, and then finally, to kind of wrap it all up in a fun graduation play, I spoke at a TEDx here in Chicago and did a cap and gown talk about my learning. So, that all of that combined made my crazy year come to life. My own little education.
All right, everybody, let's take a quick break and thank today's sponsors. As I said at the beginning of the episode, it's that time of year when we need to be setting goals and determining what skills we'll need in order to accomplish those goals. That's where our sponsor for today's show, Skilled Up, comes in. Finding online courses in the areas you're interested in can be a real rabbit hole that causes you to waste a lot of time. Skilled Up curates the world of online and educational resources to bridge the gap between education and job skills. They put the best of all online learning under one roof, and online learning is flexible, self-paced, and affordable. They have courses in web design, photography, marketing, software development, business management, and much more. The bottom line is this: you have to keep improving your skills to navigate the world we live in today, and Skilled Up is a great place to do that. Acquiring new skills allows you to be more creative and build new things. They've also put together a free toolkit for innovative creators that you can download at promo.skilledup.com/creative. Again, that's promo.skilledup.com/creative. So let me ask you this, and this is something I don't know that I asked you last time when you were here. In all of this, were there any really challenging moments where you're thinking, oh my God, this is all going to fall apart or it's not going to work, or where you just felt really, really in a difficult place?
So I would say the end of January, the first month. Right. Because, you know, I don't know if you've ever started anything new, but like, you know, let's say you're starting a new workout regimen. The first week is kind of like your fit, like a good one. You're, mm-hmm. you know, you have all the right gear and stuff. And then you get to the end of the first week, you're like, crap, dude, I don't want to do another week. And it was kind of like that. February didn't come together super clean. March was still on the horizon. No one was answering my emails. No one really knew about me. So that was a really rough kind of couple weeks, like towards the end of January and beginning of February. And then again in July, 6 months of traveling and like sleeping on so many different beds and couches and in cars, like figuring it all out and just not knowing if I could finish the project. And then I think again, when I was working on the book project and realizing like how big of an undertaking it was just massive for like one guy. I had to like lean on so many friends to make it come alive. And I was starting the school, working on this book project with $30,000 of other people's money. Mm-hmm. And also writing the TED Talk. So TED Talk, school, and book. Like all at once in like 8 weeks, like I had to get everything done, or so it felt. The book had a little more time than that, so I just about lost it. I was going mad. It was the hardest. I shouldn't say it's the hardest I've ever worked, but it was up there.
What kept you going in January?
I'd say it was probably I had put so much into it already by then. You know, I had been working on it. Let's see, I'd quit my job, right? So, and I had the fall to work on the website and the campaign and all that. So October, November, December, I had 4 months invested already. I had a community of people there like, you can quit, it'd be okay. Like I had a job offer the January, like the guy, the agency I worked at, he said, you could stay here if you want. Like we've loved working with you. And you can continue this. And then just, I'd moved them in the direction of getting a foundation started, and he offered me a job to run it. I just knew that there wasn't going to be another opportunity like this. You know, I had set the stage, the dominoes were all being placed, even though I couldn't figure out a couple of challenges at the time. It just felt like there was too much already done to not quit. And there was enough, like I said, there was enough of a safety net that if I went through February and I really did crash, like, it'd be fine. I could also, I'm a guy of vision, right? So like, I can see the bigger picture really clearly. Like I could tell that if I could just get through December of 2012, we would be able to thread together a good story. Like I was there, like I had something unique. I had to push through, like, you know, like I could see it. I just couldn't figure out how to get there at the time, you know?
That's interesting that you say that, because I've felt that way numerous times along the journey of building all of what I've built. And
yeah, sure.
I think that whole idea of a point of no return is something I've mentioned multiple times once you reach that point and you've just put so much into it, that's actually the one thing that keeps you from quitting. You're just, you say, I've already put this much into it. I might as well see it out as far as I can go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think like there is wisdom, I think, in quitting things, but I don't think you should quit things when you're tired or alone. Mm-hmm. And, I was pretty tired already. Like it just like I said, it's kind of like the first week of working out. And the times that were the roughest was when I looked around and I realized I didn't have a team. I had a community, like friends who cared about me, but I didn't have a team. And that was brutal. Like I'd had a team for 5 years, like 8 awesome people that I worked with, and, you know, a whole slew of students who, you know, were around me all the time. Like it got lonely quick. And so I just realized you just can't quit when you're tired or alone. You quit when you're in good company and you have a good head on your shoulders.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I think it makes a perfect transition to really talk about you know, the bulk of what I want to spend the rest of our time talking about, which is where this all led and, you know, what resulted in me calling you to ask you to come and speak at Instigator Experience.
Yeah. So, you know, all of it became a springboard. I mean, there was an incredible community of these risk takers, and we were all talking about what we had learned during the year. And, but there was this kind of like underlying and really loud question, a resounding question around, can we replicate leap year? Is there a replicable format, that could disrupt higher education in some capacity? Or contribute to it, maybe in whatever way you want to look at it there. But so we quickly turned around and launched a prototype of a school called Experience Institute. And it would take the learnings from leap year and a lot of the community and, you know, some of the findings and turn it into something that other people could do. And with a slightly more academic bend. So we created a little bit of a board of advisors and some instructors. We created a website with some great friends in San Diego, and you know, we decided it would be based out of Chicago. The program would be, instead of 12 experiences, it would be kind of 3 core experiences, and it would have classes in between each experiences. So roughly every quarter. And then from there, those are just some of the boundaries, but then students could design their own education through experience, just like I did, but just have more of a community and a little bit of a framework. And, and sure enough, like a handful of people met me in Chicago only, you know, 9 months, eight or nine months after I finished my leap year, and to prototype it, to see if they could pull it off too. And we met here. We didn't have a campus. The instructors were my friends who I'd met along the way. The classrooms, the apprenticeships would be companies that I had spent time with too, or some of the companies that the students hadn't even known before they got here. And there was a little bit of a coaching structure. So teaching here in Chicago in September, then they left to their companies, and while they're at their companies, we continue through Google Hangouts and talking about different topics once a week, and then meet back in January, leave again, meet back in May, leave, and then they designed their graduation just last September. So they finished, and we invited the next 12 students. So we've been playing in this playground for, just over, a year and a half now, and it's been a crazy, crazy journey.
Hmm. So, you know, I mean, a big part of the reason that we wanted to have you speak at Instigator Experience is specifically around the area of leadership. And it's clear you have been the leader of this movement. And I'd love for you to talk about guiding this group through their own experiences, through the lens of the leadership lessons that it's brought to you.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like I've had the opportunity to just like mash together a few other people's thinking into EI. So I don't know if I can take all credit for this. I mean, some of this is like, you know, the D School and David Kelly has been an advisor and a dear friend, and even design thinking as a process. And you'll hear like Simon Sinek start with why and so on in a little bit of this. But like, I guess what we've kind of come down to And if like you boil down our process of designing your own education is intention, action, reflection, and then iteration. That if you want to set up like any type of learning experience, you need to start with declaring a mission, not a major. So that's the intention piece. Like, what is it you really want to learn, do, become, and why? And to know the stories behind what's propelling you into wanting to learn new skills or topics or trades or whatnot. And then like moving beyond that into the idea that you're not going to just take a class. You want to be in a position where you're taking a risk, pushing yourself outside of the things that you already know. Now that might entail a class, but to think about it more as like I'm going to move myself and into a position where I feel like over my head just slightly or with people that I haven't been with before and begin to feel that sense of of uncertainty, because that's the time when you begin to figure out how to rise to the occasion. And then reflection, that during that time, you're actively, daily, weekly, monthly, finding ways to document and reflect on what it is you're learning and how you're changing. And you're sharing those reflections with a community. So that way it's actually moving you to document and then also put it, package it. And then finally, iteration, like not to just do it once for a day or a week or even 3 months. In this case, we try to make sure they at least go through this process 3 times in the year. But that idea that you're building on what you've learned and done and able to continue it so that it continues to kind of hone in on what it is you really are learning. So that's been from a process of leading people through this, leading people through this idea. That's kind of how we boiled it down.
So let me ask you this. Talk to me about some of the results and the things that have happened in the lives that of the people who've gone through Experience Institute.
Well, it's been interesting. Like on one hand, you know, like the numbers aren't staggering, right? We've had 17 students. Like we're not like putting some massive dent, you know, in the kind of data world right now. As far as students, you have 20 million people in higher education programs. But what we're noticing is like that people are looking to us to figure this out. So on just those 17 students, 5 graduated with no debt and all had job offers throughout their year as well. And are doing well now and off and running and are the best of friends. You know, from a social media standpoint, having, you know, 250 site views and having, you know, 5,000 copies of the book sold and, you know, being able to speak across the world around the topic has been really interesting. From a higher education standpoint, to be partnered with Stanford, you know, is just like this, we're just this tiny new thing. And for Stanford to kind of say, hey, like we'd love to invite you to this year-long project, which we did this collaboration with them called At Stanford, Rethinking the Future of Higher Education, which led to 4 really interesting and compelling provocations to the future of higher education. And we got to be a part of that. I mean, that piece has traveled far and wide. And now looking at, you know, what we'll do in the next, you know, year and a half, it's just we're poised for another an incredible leap year, 2016, where we challenge people around the world to design their own education. So, I think on a very individual front, we're developing great friends. We're tackling the student debt crisis and on a very kind of small level right now. And people who leave EI have a great sense of confidence and agency, like in the sense that they know what they want to be doing, where they want to be doing it, and how they want to be doing it, without the grand debt that comes with higher education.
Talk to me about the future of education and what it looks like based on those provocations and kind of what has happened based on your experience with Stanford.
So, you know, on one hand, I don't think higher education as we know it will continue in the sense that it's going to be 4 years after high school. I think it's going to be stretched out over the course of a decade or even the rest of our lives after high school. I think there's going to be the sense that universities and maybe not just universities, but they'll be learning centers, learning labs, like places where you can go to get boosters and, you know, to to focus on a topic for a season while whenever you need to learn that topic. I know brought up working out a couple times, but they'll almost be like learning gyms, and learning will be much more of a habit rather than something that you just do at a season of life. So I think there's that sense of looping. I also think that there's going to be much less pressure to know what you want to do with the rest of your life at 18 years old. I think that's just entirely silly, and it's an old model of education. And I think that'll change quite a bit. So, you know, for the first couple of years, even maybe a few years after high school, having the opportunity that in a university setting or on your own through other communities and so on, to be able to poke at things and try things and make things, to just get that sense, to just get some knowledge about the world at large, not necessarily about just like what you're going to do with the rest of your life. I also think, you know, one thing that they talked about is flipping the campus to be less about schools of industry and more on like schools of thought. So that it's more about like we all learn ethics. There's like we all learn ethics together. We don't necessarily learn business together. So everyone is going through the ethics courses, you know. So it's not just, you know, just in that arena. So if you can imagine a campus, they called it Axis Flip. But if you can imagine flipping the campus so that it's not like the business school and the school of design and the school of medicine and so on, but you're able to start mixing these industries so that people are in class with a really wide range of industries in one class learning about a common topic that would be helpful to them. So those are a few things. The last I'll say that I'm probably one of the largest proponents for is the role of apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. Man, Srini, I can't tell you how far behind I think we are in the States on apprenticeship. Like, it's ridiculous. Everyone knows you learn so well on the job, but no one knows how to make it a meaningful experience for both the company and the student. I shouldn't say no one, but it takes a lot of work to flesh that out and to make that a common practice. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be a huge shift. I think that'll be much more common to spend 3, 6, 9, 6 months, a year with a company as a learner, not just as a potential employee.
I love it. There's so much amazing stuff here. And I really appreciate the idea that you don't figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life when you're 18 years old, just because so many of us change careers so many times. And at the age of 18, what do you really know about yourself and the world?
Right. Yep. Exactly. And I mean, there's a sense, I think everyone gets the idea that you don't know it right away. I just don't know if they know what to do about it yet. And it's hard. I mean, it's a big system to change. It's a huge system to change. And I think a lot of people have asked me, how can Experience Institute work for that gap year student? And we have right now, one of our 12 students is right in between high school and college. And he's using our framework. He's one of our folks, and it'll be interesting to see if we can scale that up for that kind of student. I think we have a long way to go.
Awesome. Well, Victor, I have always been really, really excited about the work that you're doing. Changing education is a huge personal interest of mine, just because I jokingly always say I'm a failed byproduct of the education system. And I think that what you're doing is really, really, truly life-changing work. I'm so honored that you're going to be one of our speakers at the Instigator Experience. So on that note, I want to close with one final question. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think it's their ability to bounce back. Yeah, I think it has to do with, if I'm talking probably from more recent experience, like to take some sort of hit and like get back up on their feet, look at what happened, how it happened, and then to keep going. And maybe even to run faster at that point.
Awesome. Well, it has been my absolute pleasure to have you here as a guest on the Unmistakable Creative. I'm so thrilled that you're going to be joining us in April for the Instigator Experience. And Victor is going to be talking about leadership. And trust me, he has a lot of incredible insights to share beyond the podcast. So make sure you're on the pre-launch list at theinstigatorexperience.com. And we'll wrap the show with that. If you like what you heard, the greatest compliment you could give us is to share the show with a friend and let people know what you think by leaving a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening to The Unmistakable Creative.